You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. That's freak as in F-R-E-A-K radio, freakradio.org. Scroll down the main page for the red oval, bright reddish-pink oval on top of the transmission tower. Click on that for our streaming link. Now, anyone who happens to be listening to us right now, and it is 3 o'clock in the afternoon this Monday, August the 18th, 2014, anyone who's listening is listening on our streaming service because our transmitter, to the best of my ability to determine, is still quite down. Actually, the physical metallic transmitter itself is erected and is almost entirely capable of doing its job, but it's just not working right now because of a slight problem, and our technician won't be available for at least another couple of days, I think. So again, if you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz right now, it is only on our streaming service at freakradio.org. It's 3:01 p.m. in the afternoon, and you're listening to the Mideast Migraine Show.
Forces, the naked attention, the sick metamorphosis, pushing my victims to flatter and fawn me, obeying the dictum of all eyes upon me. The ego's a castle, and I am the sentry, granting the spineless the easiest entry. My simple subjects are eager to bow, so fire up the spit, wheeling the cow. I'm in my element now. Toasting my virtue, the goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego again. Their praises, they're nursing me now with their sweet empty phrases. The critics are cleaved from my peace with the mallet. No spoils are received by the king's fragile palate. Stuffing myself on the blind adulation, fed full of self, its intense mastication. The simpleton's choir has taken its place, accolades spewing from each vacant face. Now let's say praise. Toasting my virtue, the goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego again. The goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego and toasting my virtue. The goblet is passed. 54 jesters are kissing my ass. I may be fat, but my belt has to bust before this binging can end. Feeding my ego again.
exotic, finely captured movement and chaotic rapture through means divorced from all tradition. The sweeping change was too abstruse, and the public spared him no abuse. Ridicule became a common mission. Time magazine said, who could laud this feeble and pathetic fraud? No one comprehended what autumn had transcended. Watch the gifted hands create motion in suspended state, with the sweet elation of true innovation. They harness the essence of life, antiquated institutions always seem the hardest to subvert. Jackson was condemned to spend a lifetime throwing pearls into the dirt. John Cage's young intrepid ears through the shackles of convention clear to better target man's potential. But the world assailed his pure device. Is that a symphony or a poltergeist? Called lunacy his sole credential. Can hunger and abandon be fused into a synergy? That's where genius lies, covert to the cautious eye. Weep in fragile unity, the taste of immortality, and the mind unbound. That's when John had found that silence is married to sound. His departures were reviled, but the ignorant aren't easy to convert. John was still content to spend a lifetime frozen to the dirt. Unafraid to rupture, static orthodox, with a brilliant structure which the masses libel, refused to sanction for the abstract style. It's broken ranks in that master builder, his ideals were so unyielding, kept his self-respect and lost his shirt. But he pulled into the dirt, and progress may be painful, but the vanguard feels the greatest of the hurt. Let's all prepare to make our new pariah, going prison to the dirt.
Stuart Davis performing for your listening and intellectual pleasure from his third album, Self-Untitled. Self-Untitled, going back a good 20 years ago or so. First was Feeding My Ego, which I consider to be the universal anthem of your typical ego-centered radio personality, followed by Pearls into the Dirt. Or as it's respelled elsewhere on the album, Pearls in the Dirt. Hi, my name is Ren Tawil, also known as Lawrence Tawil, and you are listening to the Mideast Migraine Show. It's 3:10 p.m., 10 after 3 in the afternoon, this Monday, August 19, 2014. Press release. Voices Across the Divide. Film screening and question and answer period with filmmaker Alice Rothschild. Now, I've seen this film. It's actually available on Netflix, as are a whole bunch of other films, many of whom were produced and directed by Israelis, some by Palestinian Arabs. Remarkable number of movies that are available on, of all places, Netflix, which probably does not pop into most people's heads as a bastion of lefty, leftist, liberal, pinko, commie, bad person, supposedly anti-Semitic movie library. But this one, Voices Across the Divide, which I just saw a couple of months ago, is really excellent. This is going to be shown Monday, September 15th. Now, that's next month. September 15th at 7 p.m., generally when things start up, at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street in Santa Cruz, California. Sliding scale of $5 to $10 is asked. Just between me and you, and it's usually stated on our invites, no one will be turned away for lack of funds. I'm looking closely here to see if that's specified. They don't say it here, which might have to do a lot with the fact that Alice Rothschild, the filmmaker, will be there and we need to pay her. At any rate, again, the cost is a $5 to $10 sliding scale. Monday, September 15, the Palestine-Israel Action Committee will host Alice Rothschild. Rothschild's film, Voices Across the Divide, will be viewed, followed by a Q&A session with Ms. Rothschild. Voices Across the Divide is a powerful documentary and oral history project exploring the Israeli-Palestinian conflict through rarely heard personal stories, narrated by Rothschild, an American Jew raised on the tragedies of the Holocaust and the dream of a Jewish homeland in Israel. Alice Rothschild is a physician, activist, and author of Broken Promises, Broken Dreams, Stories of Jewish and Palestinian Trauma and Resilience. Pluto Press, 2007, revised edition 2010, translated into Hebrew and German. Alice is co-founder and co-chair of American Jews for a Just Peace, Boston. She is on the coordinating committee of Jewish Voice for Peace, Boston, and has organized annual health and human rights delegations to Israel and Palestine since 2003, lecturing widely and writing numerous articles. Again, now this event is co-sponsored by the Palestine-Israel Action Committee, Jewish Voice for Peace, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILF, and the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the RCNV. For more information, contact Sammy at PIAC@calcentral.com. That's PIAC, P as in Paul, IAC, at calcentral.com. You bet I'm going to be there because, that, for one thing, that's how good the movie is. I don't mind seeing it again. And, of course, I'll be there in solidarity and support of my leftist liberal homies who are trying to get this narrative, the alternate narrative, which is slowly and I think steadily coming to the fore about who the Palestinians really are, what Palestine is really about, what Israel is really about. And that's what that is. You know, 2 days ago, Saturday, the 16th of August, there was a big, big rally. Right now, people's minds are, I think most notably, on the situation with Michael Brown of Ferguson, Missouri, the 18-year-old African-American man who, of course, was, as we pretty much all know, shot to death with a minimum of 6 or 7 bullets, including 1 or 2 to the head, police bullets, even though he tried to surrender a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, and there's still a lot going on in terms of peaceful protests. Unfortunately, the tremendous frustration, which is part and parcel to so much of the relationship of black to white in this country, in the U.S., as is so often the case, there is violence surrounding the anger and the dissent and the protest against what went down, what the police have done in destroying this young man's life. A lot of violence. And just about every night since Brown's death, hundreds of people, a few hundred people, maybe only two or three, if that many, 200 or 300, are involved in the immediate vicinity of where this activity came down, where Brown died, where the shots were fired. 200 or 300 people, I would say. 2 days ago in Oakland, at the docks, where an Israeli cargo ship was due into port to unload its cargo, there were, I would easily estimate, a minimum of 2,000, not 100, but 2,000 protesters. Very colorful. Protest signs abounded. Streamers, lots of color and chants and all kinds of musical instruments, horns, percussions, etc. 2,000 people in Oakland 2 days ago to protest the arrival of this Israeli cargo ship, taking the position, we were taking the position that apartheid in any form, even economic and commercial interest of the apartheid state of Israel and the annihilators of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip shall have no part, even over here, overseas, on the other side of the world from Palestine and Israel. They ain't coming into port. As it turned out, and we knew this a good 24 hours before the beginning of the protest, first the march to the dock, where, of course, the authorities would not let us in, as dozens of them, maybe a couple of hundred cops, were standing by with their riot gear, the riot helmets in hand, and batons at their sides. It didn't really come to that, thank goodness. There was no trouble at all, no violence. No violence among 2,000 people who wanted to protest the apartheid state of Israel in Oakland's, in the Bay Area's own ports, in our bay. Channel 5 was there, KPIX, and Channel 7, KGO. Their news vans were there. I didn't see any reporters. The vans were simply parked, you know, with the bristling electronic gadgetry on top of the thing. And there was even a third van there, although I think that might have been Interpol or some other police media wagon used by the authorities. But the point is there were at least two TV stations represented in the form of being able to transmit either a live or recorded feed out to the public. Like I said, I saw no one even in those vans or anyone else standing around them that I could recognize. And so it didn't seem very apparent to me that they were transmitting the proceedings of the 2,000 at the docks live. Sure enough, that evening, we were at home, watched Channel 5, went back and forth between 5 and 7 several times. Not a thing. No nonviolent protest, no indication that there was any such protest against apartheid Israel. The whole thing was totally peaceful. It was a gas for all of us. It was kind of precarious there in terms of anticipating trouble, as is often the case when you have a march of such immensity approaching private property. Or perhaps it wasn't. Was it really so much private property? I mean, we're talking about the port of Oakland, California. Wouldn't that be civic, public property of a sort? At any rate, not a peep. The news, the commercial, corporately controlled and restrained, mainstream media, at least television, said nothing that evening. I mean, we're talking about last Saturday, 2,000 or more individuals who began the march at the Oakland West BART station, Bay Area Rapid Transit station in Oakland, downtown Oakland, where we were exposed to hundreds or thousands of other people who were passing by. And even though it was a long and rather desolate march, the mile out to the docks, to the entrance of the docks, and their closed and locked gates guarded by police of various stripes, nothing on the media. Nothing on the media about that. Instead, and this is understandable to a point, the focus is on all too common American relations between Caucasians and African Americans, the common racial strife, which is still, even some 50 years after the passing of the Monumental Civil Rights Act of 1964, still a major, major thing going on as both populations increase in an economy which is seemingly incapable of supporting us. Ferguson, Missouri, is foremost on the minds of people who watch the news and worry about its implications. Other than that, they're still talking quite a bit about the Ukraine, other hot spots around the world, those oh-so-terrible Islamic savages, quote-unquote, in West Africa, Nigeria, around the world, and how they're beating up on each other. But nothing about Gaza, almost nothing. Once in a great while, you will hear a bit of a peep about what's going on in the Gaza Strip, as far as most people know, they're still trying to hammer out a ceasefire deal, make it into at least a relatively permanent thing, but nothing really in the news, in the headlines about the Gaza Strip. Nothing front page anyway. And so with the hubbub about Israel's attack and slaughter in the Gaza Strip, for now subdued, kept to a minimum, kept quiet, because we're not supposed to say bad things about the Israeli state. That's not on people's minds as much. People, the press will probably tell you, this has something to do with why they didn't cover the 2,000-person-strong march in Oakland 2 days ago. August the 16th. It's not in the news otherwise, so why bother talking about 2,000? I was there. I was at the head of the line. I was one of the very last people to leave. I made it a point to do that. I took pictures of plenty myself of the mysterious media wagon and the police with their holding on, clutching their riot gear close to themselves, close to their waist, ready for anything, and it didn't happen. No violence. No injuries, none. Certainly none that I was aware of, and absolutely nothing that I saw. A lot of speeches, a lot of chanting, a great rally for the cause of peace and justice and reconciliation for everyone in the Middle East. The newspaper people didn't care. Television and radio did not much care. Maybe KPFA in Berkeley had something to say about it. They were supposed to have had a live stream, but in the car on the way up, we were trying to pull in the live stream on my companion's little device, and we couldn't even pick that up. Maybe because it was before the event actually started. At any rate, I wanted to tell you about this action, which did take place last Saturday, 2 days ago. in Oakland and assure you that it did happen, and just as importantly, to assure you that if the, any reporting on the corporate media occurred about it at all, it's unbeknownst to me. All this other stuff happening around the world, including violent protests in Ferguson, Missouri, the hometown of the late Michael Brown. God, people, Molotov cocktails thrown at cops. I'm not making a judgment one way or another about who is to blame or if anyone deserves to be burned alive or anything like that. But those are violent protests, and as far as the media is concerned, there's always, if it bleeds, it leads. But if it doesn't bleed at all and there's no violence, not a peep. Nothing. This is the Middy's Migraine Show, coming to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Coming to you every Monday at 3 p.m., and, of course, the weekend edition of Middy's Migraine, Saturday at 11. Because I was away last weekend, of course, I did not do a live show. That's extremely rare, and I've been doing this program for easily over 2 years now. But I'll be back on Saturday. I expect to be back here at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, 11 o'clock in the morning, continuing the reading of Congressman Paul Finley's They Dare to Speak Out. People and institutions confront Israel's lobby. That'll be Saturday at 11. Now, what else do we have for this program? Look, folks, it's already 3:27 in the afternoon. How is this for a punch in the gut, my friends? From the American Arab Anti-Discrimination, over three decades of advocacy, and I don't have the full subtitle of the organization in front of me, so I can't remember the whole thing. Three decades of advocacy and growth or something. Folks, Joan Rivers, you heard me right, Joan Rivers. In fact, I'm going to go to another email here, which... which I'd better find in a hurry. The comedian, the very old, in her roughly 90 years old right now, American Jewish woman Joan Rivers, who's been up and down in the entertainment news over the long run. Okay, I'm going to have to find her here. She's in trouble with us, folks. As I said, American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, or the ADC, demands disciplinary action against Joan Rivers. And ADC actually is appalled by Joan Rivers' latest statement. And, oh, God, this thing again. I'm sorry, folks. Okay, here we go. Here we go. ADC appalled by comedian or comedian Joan Rivers' latest statement. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee is appalled by Joan Rivers' latest attempt at deflecting blame and avoiding making an apology for her racist comments against Palestinians. We're speaking about the famous, now infamous, comedian Joan Rivers. Deflecting blame and avoiding an apology for her racist comments against Palestinians. In her most recent statement, Ms. Rivers blamed the media for catching her off guard in their questions on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, claiming that this caused her to say the word Palestinians where she intended to say Hamas. She's actually said, Palestinians refuse to die. It is taken out of context. I have not seen the video or heard the comments, but these were included in recent statements by Ms. Rivers. This claim is, it says here on the ADC dispatch, this claim is not only offensive for its attempt to excuse her racist comments, but also was completely fabricated as she made comments that Palestinians, and I quote, have low IQs, end quote, and subsequently appeared on Israel Channel 10 News, Israel Channel 10, to further make the anti-Semitic comment that all Palestinians should receive nose jobs. When asked specifically about Palestinian civilian casualties, she stated that they all, quote, deserve to be dead. Clearly, Ms. Rivers fully intended on making the racist comments against the Palestinian people as a whole, and this weak attempt at giving a roundabout response in the absence of an apology is even more offensive to the American people, and frankly, an insult to the Arab American community. Ms. Rivers also ends the statement by trying to distract from the issue at hand by imploring people to turn their attention to, quote, what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. Not only is this an embarrassing effort to take away from her racist remarks rather than address and apologize for them, but also a complete disgrace to and making light of further racial tensions taking place in Missouri. The fact that Ms. Rivers uses one racial issue to deflect from another is, at best, ironic. We continue to demand, ADC continues to demand that NBC/E, you know, as in E exclamation point, the cable channel, American Movie Channel, AMC, and QVC, the shopping network, quality value channel, I guess it stands for, NBC/E exclamation, AMC, and QVC take necessary disciplinary action against Ms. Rivers for her racist comments and her demeaning handling of the situation. In bold letters, ADC writes, we renew our call upon our members to continue contacting Ms. Rivers' employers to voice their complaints. Call QVC directly at, I'll give you the number, 1-800-345-1515 to voice your disapproval of Ms. Rivers' comments. Members may also tweet at NBC, at AMC _TV, and at QVC with the hashtag Drop Joan. Hashtag Drop Joan. Capital D and capital J if uppercase letters are important for those hashtag things. And they close by saying, there is no place for hate speech on our American networks, no matter the minority group, and ADC will continue working for justice and equality in this regard. Joan Rivers, folks, now the infamous Joan Rivers. I'll be a hot damn. Well, let's get rid of this one here. Okay. Yeah. That's what's going on there. I want to read to you a fine piece of very brief literature. Very elderly gentleman who was instrumental in the creation of Zionist Israel in 1948, who served in the military, is one of a growing number of outstanding Israeli Jewish voices who are finally giving credence to the Palestinian narrative and trying to face up to Israel's complicity in, nay, Israel's downright forcing of the ethnic cleansing circumstances against the Palestinian native Arabs. Ilan Pappe is the man who had already a number of years ago, because of his statements, primarily the publishing of his book entitled The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, where he puts front and center the facts about how Israel threw out the Palestinian Arabs in order to create their preferably Jewish-only state. After that book was published, he was harassed and he was ostracized to the point where he and his family were compelled to leave Israel. He no longer considers himself to be an Israeli citizen. He maintains his Jewish identity and Jewish faith, of course, but Ilan Pappe is now living in the United Kingdom, not welcome in his native Israel, where I believe he was born. I may be wrong about that, but he definitely was very much involved in the creation of the State of Israel in the 1940s, 66 years ago. Ilan Pappe, I'm not sure if this is something he made it a point to recently disclose, but it is in the form of this short message laid out point by point, and I will read it to you. Six myths regarding the birth of Israel in 1948. Israeli scholar Ilan Pappe recently published an important new book. This one titled The Idea of Israel. The Idea of Israel, London:Verso, 2014. Among other issues, he discusses several myths surrounding Israel's founding in 1948. They are summarized here. Please note that this book uses British spelling, which generally just means S's instead of Z's and certain long words. O-U-R instead of the typical American English O-R. That's all there is to that. Okay, six myths regarding the birth of Israel in 1948. Listen up, especially you Zionist monitors who are making it a point to listen to my show. Myth number one, quote, Israel accepted the United Nations Partition Resolution of 1947 and therefore agreed to the creation of a Palestinian state next to the Jewish one over more than half of Palestine, the Jewish state being 56% of historic Palestine. This is the reality. Ilan Pappe says, Ben-Gurion, the Zionist leader, military leader who eventually became its first prime minister, ignored the territorial dimension of the partition resolution, which divided Palestine into two states, and continually referred to the resolution only as granting international legitimacy for the idea of the Jewish state whose borders the Zionist movement and no one else would determine. Myth number two, quote, all the Palestinians followed Al-Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the Palestinian leader, in his resistance to any UN peace plan, end quote. The reality? Ben-Gurion's chief advisors reported to the Zionist leader that the vast majority of Palestinians accepted partition. I'll read it again. Ben-Gurion's chief advisors reported to the Zionist leader, Ben-Gurion himself, that the vast majority of Palestinians accepted partition and, continuing to quote Mr. Pape's sources here, the Palestinians resorted to violence only for self-defense. Myth number three. The, quote, Arab world was determined to destroy the Jewish state in 1948, end quote. The reality? The Arab world was fragmented and did not have a unified policy on the question of Palestine. Iraq and Transjordan, which is to say the older name for the newly created Kingdom of Jordan, were seeking an understanding with the new Jewish state. As a result, Ben-Gurion concluded a secret treaty with Jordan under which the two sides agreed to divide Palestine between them after the British withdrawal from the country. Britain was in the process, I'm just clarifying here, Great Britain had already made it clear that they were going to quit Palestine, just as they eventually quit India and what would become Pakistan, what would become the states of India and Pakistan. It was actually no longer economic for them to maintain that far-flung edge of their empire, and likewise for Palestine, no longer terribly interested in maintaining their presence there. And plus the fact that Great Britain was influenced, their decision-making was influenced by powerful and some rather wealthy Zionist Jews who wanted Palestine, actually all of it plus other lands, which became part of Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. They wanted all of it for their new Zionist state and claimed that the Balfour Declaration, signed by a British government minister, provided that for them. That is not true. That is not what the Balfour Declaration said as a whole. But as I continue my clarification here, Britain knew that the Zionist Jews wanted all of Palestine for their Jewish state and basically was bowing out to allow the Zionists to fill the power vacuum once they were gone, and that's exactly what happened. Israel ended up, after the fighting subsided in the beginning of 1949, controlling 78% of the former British Palestine Mandate. Okay. Ben-Gurion concluded a secret treaty with Jordan under which the two sides agreed to divide Palestine between them after the British withdrawal from the country. Myth number four. Y'all listening, folks? This is Ilan Pape, famous Jewish turncoat, as many Israelis would refer to him as, because he's telling the truth about what the first Israelis did in establishing their state very violently, killing a great number of unarmed Palestinian Arabs in the process. Ilan Pape, these are his words. Myth number four, quote, the Palestinians left their homes because they were told to do so by their leaders and the leaders of neighboring Arab countries, end quote. The reality is there is no evidence, and he puts the word evidence in quotes, there is no evidence for such an allegation, and it made no strategic sense for the Arab side to demand such a flight, which would only have made the battlefield more complicated for them. In other words, instead of creating a refugee problem, which in this case led to Palestinians never seeing their former homes again, for your own self-defense, it's best to stay put. This reality here for myth number four goes on to read, Palestinians became refugees because the Zionist leadership was determined to reduce their numbers by all possible means. Zionist military commanders knew exactly what to do, namely, expel the Palestinians from their villages and towns. Myth number five, Israel was a David that miraculously defeated an Arab Goliath. Here's the reality. Jewish forces were superior from the beginning, and the Arabs were disorganized and weak. Talking about primarily the armies of neighboring Arab states who intervened on behalf of the Palestinians, many of whom were already refugizing themselves. Those Arab armies were disorganized and weak. The British occupiers, by the way, had disarmed the Palestinians in 1936, leaving Palestinians with little means of self-defense. So much for the Israel's David to the Arabs' Goliath. Jewish forces were superior from the beginning, and the Arabs were disorganized and weak. Finally, myth number six from Ilan Pape. Quote, Israel extended its hand for peace after the war and was rejected by the Arab states and the Palestinians. Here's the reality. The Lausanne Protocol, Lausanne, the Lausanne Protocol signed on 12 May 1949 by Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Israel, set three principal guidelines for peace in Palestine, including recognition of the earlier partition plan and, therefore, the existence of Israel, the internationalization of Jerusalem, which, by the way, was also called for in the original United Nations partition of the area. Internationalization of Jerusalem, meaning that the entire city would belong to no one nation, and the repatriation of Palestinian refugees. There were serious initiatives for peace on the part of Syria and Jordan that were rejected by the Israeli government. One of the most important things that stands out in my eye in this last myth number six is that there was an agreement between these Arab countries and the newly found state of Israel for the repatriation of Palestinian refugees. Israel signed to it and never did a thing about it. To this day, Palestinians are often to the point of their death in trying to return, prevented by Israel, by Israeli soldiers, the Israeli Air Force, the Israeli Navy from returning. Israel prevents the Palestinians from returning to their homes, their land, in their Palestine, now controlled by the Jewish state of Israel. No, absolutely no repatriation of any form. Indeed, it is Israel which continues to steal more and more and more land. And I mean steal. I make absolutely no apology in describing the situation that way. The military occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem and the de facto economic siege and occupation, the actual economic siege and de facto occupation of the Gaza Strip continues. That whole occupation of those three principal areas is illegal according to international law, which, in addition to that illegal military occupation, all the new Jewish settlements in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem are all illegal under UN law. Six myths regarding the birth of Israel. If anyone wants to talk about any of this stuff, by the way, you can call me here at the station. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, coming to you live right now on our online streaming radio service at freakradio.org. Freakradio.org. If you are listening to me now, it can only be either through that live streaming service, as our transmitter is not functioning at the moment. Unless, of course, you're listening to a rerun or a refeed of this show. I expect to be refeeding the show over the next 7 days, next 5 to 7 days. Call me here at the studio if you want. Area code 831 427-3772. Again, area 831 427-3772, and we shall discuss. If you want to just call to say hi, check in, let me know that you're listening, that's always welcome. I love hearing from the peoples when they're actually listening. Oh my. My magic box says quite a few people are listening right now. Very encouraging. Wonderfully encouraging. Y'all are wondering about my magic box, aren't you? It's a handy little tool. And this is the Mideast Migraine Show, coming to you by way of FRSC and by way of me, Lawrence Tawil. I mentioned reruns of the program, the archive for most of my shows that I managed to somehow successfully record under the rather primitive technological conditions that we function under here. The archive for Mideast Migraines programs, both the Monday edition and the Saturday morning edition, are available at another website, radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, the numerical character for all.net, R-A-D-I-O. The number 4, ALL.NET, radioforall.net. Just go to that, plug in Mideast Migraines, and magically in chronological order, the latest show at the top will appear before your very eyes, assuming you remember to switch on your monitor. Okay. Now, I spoke a moment ago of Ilan Pappe. Former elder Israeli, if not a statesman, at least a former soldier for the Zionist cause, Zionism being the political effort to establish a new homeland for the Jewish people, no matter what that does to the people who were there before. Oh, sounds as if we're getting a phone call. Free radio. Thank you very much. Thank you for your call. Okay, folks, I tried to keep the mouthpiece on the phone. Normally what I do is I take my time in turning up the volume levels on the board here so that you can all hear the person as they call in live. But instead of fumbling with the equipment, I simply picked up the handset in my hand, tried to keep the earpiece close to the microphone. Maybe you didn't hear, because it always takes me a few extra seconds to figure out, oh, what do I turn up, this volume or that volume? Normally, I would turn up, now I can't even find it. there it is, phone line number one, right in front of me. Fourth one over. Turn up the phone line, and press the button on the handset cradle here for line one. Actually, it was already pressed. The point is, if you didn't hear what the caller said, he was not interested in having a conversation, but he most definitely was supportive of what I was doing here, and his basic message was, it was recorded, if it can be heard on the recording device that I'm using to record the show for posterity. He simply said, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I do want to thank you and encourage you for the fine work that you're doing. And he said thank you very much, and then he hung up. Thank you, caller. I hope you continue to listen. And please, please, tell all your friends about the program and about this wonderful underground pirate community radio service, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Normally, we broadcast at 101.3 FM. I finally mentioned that on today's program. Normally, we're on the air on the FM spectrum at 101.3 FM, and barring any other technical difficulties, we are streaming 24/7 at freakradio.org. Tell your friends, enemies, and family, everybody, about Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you go to our website, freakradio.org, scroll down the main page there to the bottom, you'll see the word schedule in a semicircle around the picture of the transmitter radio tower. It's just a little cute little cartoon picture there. With the red oval on top that you'd normally click for this free streaming link. But if you just want to see the schedule, which admittedly we have a great deal of difficulty adhering to for various reasons, to get at least to know when you can catch Mideast Migraines, Mondays at 3 in the afternoon, Saturday at 11 a.m., click on schedule on our website at freakradio.org. To remind you, give you a rough idea of what we do and when we do it. By the way, we, like so many other hands that are held out to you, you come across this everyday TV, radio. Of course, in the city of Santa Cruz, there are plenty of median straddlers who are standing or sitting there, often very desolate looking with their signs, pen on cardboard most of the time, saying, out of work, please help, any amount will do. There are also those hands that are held out for help. And the point is, like so many others, we too are asking for your donations. Everyone, including yours truly, me, has to pay for the privilege and the right to do a program. I pay a fee every month. Other programmers,
hopefully,
are paying their monthly fees in order to keep this outfit on the air. The rest of it has to be covered by you. We do not get corporate funds, as you could easily imagine. It's just not in our nature. We are not compliant with the Federal Communications Commission. We hold our middle finger up to the FCC and say, fuck you. We're a non-compliant pirate, purely community-oriented underground radio service, and we will get our non-corporate message across to the, all listeners. Thank you very much. It's actually written in our bylaws that we will not accept corporate funding or other certain major dollops from groups of people. We will gladly accept any amount of money, or at least up to a certain point. There may be a numerical ceiling to it, but we will happily and quite necessarily accept donations from you, the listener. Please consider sending your donations in now to the following address. Write this on your envelope. FRSC stands for Free Radio Santa Cruz. You just have to write FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California. That's two words. Santa as in ho, ho, ho. Cruz spelled capital C-R-U-Z. Santa Cruz, California, 95061. We're in Santa Cruz County on the west coast, the left coast of North America in California. Again, the address for your donations, well wishes, whatever. Please do not send cash. Check or money order only. FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, Ca, 95061. Again, that phone number to the studio here is 831-427-3772. It's 3:58 in the afternoon. Very short musical break here. Let's continue with a little more Stuart Davis. Stuart Davis of my almost native Minnesota.
Pro-life, pro-choice, beauty queens, liquid Clorox, feminine hygiene, Coca-Cola, tartar toothpaste, dial this number, slap it on my face, perfect placement. Highway ditch, useless products, that's my niche. I the billboard, pitching God knows what on a billboard. Cheap space, I'm a freeway slot, granddad of the discounter. Tanning, Campbell's soup, funeral caskets, porno flicks and Fruit Loops, garden weasels, ceiling fans, fireworks and alcohol, fake hair for the balding man on a billboard. God knows what on a billboard. Cheap space, I'm a freeway slut, granddad of the discounted. Be wise, advertise. Ads for famous churches, topless bars, homeless shelters, missing kids and rock stars, fast food and 3-2 beer.
station. I see the culture. I see one nation on a billboard. Pitching God knows what on a billboard. Cheap space, I'm a freeway slut. Granddad of the discount dad. Be wise, advertise. Is pristine. It is the spirit realm, and you are at the helm, where all the hungry souls convene. Your instruments are gauged for motion. Don't tie the craft to keep it still. Rip the captain's idol, then the ship is bright. Oh, you have a voyage to fulfill. This vessel harbors no one meek, timid never seek. You watch the water rise, and you have anxious eyes. There is a compass in your chest. There is a purpose you possess. Every drop and every crest. I know your sails are full and tight. I see you toward the house of light. Some may embrace their hesitations with the passive anchors that they lay. But retrospect will prove those who never move become a pirate's easy prey. This boat is the sum of all your actions. Its body is a product of your deeds. Crossing water fast. Is the mast. You were christened with Godspeed. The frightened ones who wouldn't board envy you from shore. You're in the rising tide. You are in her eyes. There is a compass in your chest. There is a purpose you possess. With every drop and every crest, I see your sails are full and
I can't help. I can't help but want to sing along. Chorus, people.
You are immersed in affirmation. Bathed in the source of your creation. Some are tempted by a dimmer glow, drown in the undertow.
But you are centered in
a higher conscious wind. You see the beacon clear and bright. There is a compass in your chest.
There is a purpose
you possess. With every drop and every crest, I see your sails are full and tight.
Pressing toward the house of light.
There's a compass in your chest.
Pressing toward the house of light.
There's a purpose you possess.
Pressing toward the house of light. With every drop and every crest, I see sails are full and tight.
Pressing toward the house of light.
Beautiful song and a wonderful piece of music. Again, Stuart Davis, House of Light. There's another song in this album that in his most recent tours around the country and in Europe, Stu Davis loves to sing again on this album. It's called Universe Communion. Speaking in part about aliens, alien peoples from outside the Earth, and how there will be an inevitable communion between themselves and ourselves. But to me, the song you just heard, House of Light, is, as I hear it, as I see it, a combination hymn and anthem. And I told him so. I said, if you're going to do Universe Communion from this self-untitled album, you should probably do House of Light just as often. I get too teary-eyed and emotional when I try to sing it. I can't sing it when I get like that. Okay, back to the show. This is the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Currently streaming live on our internet radio service at freakradio.org. Don't forget to tell everyone to click on the red oval and that they have to have an audio program like Real Player Cloud, Windows Media Program, etc., iTunes, stuff like that, in order to pull the linked signal in. But basically, you click on the red oval to hear it on your device. Final letter to Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, an open letter to Mr. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Stand for law and justice or resign. This sent to me back on August 7th, some 11 days ago, from Charlotte Cates. Actually dated 5 August, open letter for humanity and the little remained credibility of international law. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, stand for law and justice or resign. Mr. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he's from South Korea, by the way, a Korean name, in case you're wondering, not that that means anything. We, the undersigned Palestinian human rights and community-based organizations, are extremely disappointed by your performance, notably by your biased statements, your failure to act, and the inappropriate justification of Israel's violations of IHL, I believe it stands for International Humanitarian Law, which amount to war crimes. Until today, you have taken no explicit and tangible measures to address the recent Israeli attacks in the occupied Palestinian territory since June the 13th. Moreover, your statements have been either misleading because they endorse and further Israeli false versions of facts, or contrary to the provisions established by international law and to the interests of its defenders, or because your words justify Israel's violations and crimes. You have undeniably assumed a biased position toward the current attack on Gaza and Israeli violations in the West Bank by failing to clearly condemn Israeli unlawful actions in the OPT, Occupied Palestinian Territory, the OPT, while, on the other hand, not hesitating to accuse, sometimes mistakenly, Palestinian combatants in Gaza of violations of international law. This bias can be noted in the following excerpts. Here's an excerpt. The Secretary General strongly condemns the killing today of at least 10 Palestinian civilians and shelling outside of the UNRWA, United Nations Relief and Welfare Administration, I believe, school in Rafah, providing shelter to thousands of civilians. The attack is yet another gross violation of international humanitarian law, which clearly requires protection by both parties of Palestinian civilians, UN staff, and UN premises, among other civilian facilities. That is the quotation here. They go on to say, such statement, by failing to name the perpetrator, Israel, is not only biased, but also offensive to UNRWA, itself a UN agency, as well as to other UN agencies and international organizations, the struggle to provide relief and protection to Palestinians in Gaza. UNRWA, UNRWA, the refugee relief agency, which has lost 9 staff in Gaza. 9 of its United Nations personnel have died in Gaza since the beginning of this current Israel's Operation Protective Edge, as they call it. UNRWA hosts around 270,000 internally displaced, which is 25% of Gaza's population, internally displaced in its shelters. UNRWA, preliminary analysis on a previous attack against one of its schools has indicated that it had been hit by Israel artillery, constituting an indiscriminate attack and likely a war crime. Moreover, by condemning the storage of weapons in UNRWA schools without offering a complete details and a proper account on international law, your statements endorse Israeli excuses to unlawfully, in italics, to unlawfully, indiscriminately target such civilian objects. In addition, by condemning the report, by condemning the reported violation by Hamas of the mutually agreed humanitarian ceasefire, which commenced this morning, again, this is as of 5 August, he is shocked and profoundly disappointed by these developments. this is another dispatch here, which is obviously not written by someone with the greatest mastery of English literary skills, the use of punctuation, etc., is a little confusing to me, so I'll just get through this the best I can. In addition, by condemning the reported violation by Hamas of the mutually agreed humanitarian ceasefire, which commenced this morning, he is shocked and profoundly disappointed by these developments. The Secretary General reveals a reckless endorsement of Israeli version of facts, blaming Hamas for violating the ceasefire, even though admitting that, and I quote here, the Secretary General notes that the UN has no independent means to verify exactly what happened, end quote, and still demanding, quote, the immediate and unconditional release of the falsely allegedly captured soldier, end quote, referring to the soldier who Israel was insisting to the world was kidnapped by Hamas, even though they're clearly in a war, so I don't think the word kidnapped truthfully applies. Turned out the soldier was killed in battle, not kidnapped. At least not at the point where his dead body was found. Continuing here with this dispatch, the following statement further illustrates the Secretary General's ignorance of facts on the ground. Following statement, the General Secretary has learned with concern that leaflets are reportedly being dropped by the Israeli Defense Forces in the northern Gaza Strip this evening, warning tens of thousands of residents to leave their homes and evacuate to Gaza City. If true, this would have a further devastating humanitarian impact on the beleaguered civilians of those areas of the Gaza Strip who have already undergone immense suffering in recent days. The drop of leaflets has been a known practice since the beginning of the Israeli operation in Gaza, contributing to a scenario of more than 480,000 internally displaced. Total population, by the way, of the Gaza Strip is about 1.8 million. Continuing, in the same statement, the Secretary General strongly urged all sides to avoid any further escalation at this time, noting that all sides must meet all obligations under international humanitarian law, both towards civilians ahead of impending attacks, as well as maintaining proportionality in any kind of military response. Revealing an undue equalization of the two sides of the conflict, and failing to address the greater impact of violations committed by Israel, which has killed at least 1,814, the vast majority of whom are civilians, during its operation in Gaza. Mr. Secretary General, When you make no distinction between oppressors and victims in all your statements, when you name Palestinian combatants as perpetrators of violations of war crimes while you ignore naming Israel, as you used to do when referring to specific actions, when you avoid codifying Israeli actions amount to war crimes while you insist on prescribing Palestinian reactions as grave breaches of IHL, international humanitarian law, when you always advocate unlawfully the Israel right to self-defense while having not pointed out the Palestinians' legitimate and legal rights to resist occupation, colonization, and institutionalized discrimination, when you adopt and advocate Israeli false stories while not mentioning Palestinians' narrative, when you disregard facts on grounds clearly resulting from Israeli attacks while you seek the immediate and unconditional release of a falsely captured soldier who is in the battlefield, you do not maintain peace and security, nor do you ensure human rights. By reviewing your statements, it becomes evidence you have not been fulfilling your mandate. In contrary, your statements have not only allowed the continuance of Israel's killing our people, but also encouraged states to continue providing Israel with impunity. Impunity, of course, meaning not forcing Israel to account for its crimes, letting Israel get away without punishment. As you cannot say the truth, we advise you to either drastically change your positioning, not only in words, but also in your efforts to, through the UN, effectively end the current conflict or to resign. Or to resign. For us, if you continue playing this role, you prove what our people feel, that you are a partner in, or at least an enabler of, the ongoing violations of international humanitarian law committed by Israel against our families, children, women, elders, against our people. Many signatures, individuals including Richard Falk, former UN special reporter on human rights in the Palestinian territories occupied since 1967, Luisa Morgantini, former vice president of the European Parliament, Ahmad Mohazen, president of the Association for Twinning French Cities and Palestinian Refugee Camps, interesting, Breitenbach, poet, writer, painter, and activist, John Pilger, journalist, filmmaker, and author. Those are individuals who have signed. There are also signatures of Palestinian and international human rights and civil society organizations. Far too many for me. Far too many. God, must be over 100 there. Okay. I apologize for the fact that this Palestinian group could not come up with a current living, surviving literary person who could have done a better job in writing and translating their concerns. Frankly, this is another, these kinds of statements often, for me personally, serve only to dishearten me, because it's very pie in the sky when you shoot for the moon. I suppose the pun is intended here, in this case, shooting for Ban Ki-moon to either stand for law and justice or resign. Shoot for the moon in sense of aim for the very top of the hierarchy of those in charge of world governments, world civil organizations. It's not going to work. You know, he may or may not make a statement towards these people, but probably nothing will come of that. Okay, pretty much for that. You know, I was talking about Ilan Pape, a Jewish man originally from Israel, very instrumental in the formation and maintenance of the Israeli state until he saw the light and began to see the crimes that Israel was responsible for and how Zionism is basically failing, totally anachronistic, bankrupt philosophy that only serves to isolate one people from another and create an apartheid, thoroughly apartheid environment in Israel and Palestine. What did I do with it? Come on, Miko, I know. God, I hate it when that happens. Where are you, Miko? I know I sent you to this folder. I'm sorry. Oh, there he is. Okay, I was mistaking this. I had it right in front of me, folks. Don't freak out. Come back to your radios now. Don't just leave your sandwich. Put off peeing, pissing for a little later here. I found it. This is Miko Peled. Okay, this is a younger, perhaps more politically virile version. No offense to Mr. Pape. Another version of Ilan Pape in the sense that here's a man who is born and bred in Israel and is Israeli Jewish man whose father, by the way, was not only a general in the Israeli Defense Forces, so-called Defense Forces, in the 1967 war where Israel took over the rest of historic Palestine, not to mention a lot of other land from two other countries. His father, Mati Peled, a general, a hero in that war, after that war, sometime later, saw the light himself and began to turn away from militarism and unquestioning support of political Zionism. He began to see that it was ultimately necessary, not only for the Arabs, but for the Israelis as well, to make good with the Palestinians, to make peace with them, and to stop oppressing them. That was Miko's father, Mati. Mati has since passed away. His son, Miko, is carrying on the peaceful fight. Miko Peled, that's M-I-K-O, last name, P as in Paul, E-L-E-D. Miko Peled is a leading Jewish advocate, not merely for peace in the Middle East, but for thorough reckoning with the Palestinian victims of Israeli apartheid and Israeli Zionism. Miko actually lives in California. He's way down in far southern California with his family. Also, most likely ostracized, if not outright thrown out of Israel for the fact that he dares talk about these things. Here I'm reading from Miko's weekly digest for August 18. That's today. Brand new. From the Holocaust to the Massacre in Gaza through Ben-Gurion Airport by Miko Peled. I think I can probably... Oh, God, I wish you wouldn't do that. I have a very strange computer here. I have to click twice on certain items in order to get the whole finished product. Okay, Miko Peled, from his website, his weekly digest, weekly internet digest. Miko Peled, tear down the wall. From the Holocaust to the massacre in Gaza through Ben-Gurion Airport. The morning after Lailat al-Qadr. Hopefully that will be explained in the course of this reading. The morning after Lailat al-Qadr, the death toll in Gaza was approaching its first 1,000. I spent the holy night of al-Qadr, which is the night before the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, which is a special night, believed to be the night when the Holy Quran was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, with friends in Ramallah, after participating in the 48,000 March for Gaza. The march began in Ramallah, the West Bank, the current de facto capital of the Palestinian Authority, and went to Qalandia Checkpoint. What began as a peaceful event with families, with children, and even babies and strollers, ended with young Palestinians with gunshot wounds being rushed in ambulances to the local hospital. Qalandia Crossing was fortified and airtight, and the Israeli soldiers stationed were shooting live ammunition at the crowd. As the ambulances were speeding through the crowd, I couldn't help wondering why there is no hospital between Qalandia and Ramallah, a good distance which includes the municipalities of Jerusalem, Al Bir, and Ramallah. The following night, I was scheduled to leave Palestine to return to the U.S., but Israeli forces sealed all the roads from Ramallah to Jerusalem for the night, and they were likely to be sealed the following day as well. At the crack of dawn, when things quieted down, my friend Samir drove me to a checkpoint that he suspected would be opened. It was open, albeit for Israelis only. And from there, I made my way back to Jerusalem. So, yes, as it turns out, although Mr. Peled resides in California, he is able to get into and out of, even if with some difficulty, Israel. He made his way back to Jerusalem. Subheading, cooperation with the authorities. That evening, as I was preparing to leave for Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, people around me were trying to calm me down. "Don't aggravate them. Cooperate, and they will be nice," quote unquote. Here's another quote. "Why go through all this unnecessary inconvenience," end quote. They were talking about the, quote, smiling Gestapo, Israeli security officers at Tel Aviv Airport that go by the squeaky clean name of Airport Security Division. Indeed, there is a color picture of some lovely young female smiling for the camera, who, quite frankly, appears to be one of those Airport Security Division people with a squeaky clean smile for the camera. That's who I believe that is. Continuing with the article now, listening to this, I was reminded of Jewish communities under the Nazi regime who believed that if they cooperate and show they are good citizens, then all will be well. But the road from cooperation to the concentration camps and then the gas chambers was a direct one. The Nazis would not have been able to kill millions of people if it were not for the naive belief held by the victims that if one would cooperate and lay low, things will be okay. The policies of racist discrimination and humiliation at Ben-Gurion Airport and the policies of ethnic cleansing and murder of Palestinians in Gaza emanate from the same Zionist ideology. As we have seen over the past seven decades, cooperation and laying low do not make things okay. It is often said that Hitler was a monster, but Hitler was not a monster. And any child will tell you that there are no such things as monsters. There are, however, many cruel people who get the support and cooperation of others in order to do unspeakable things. Hitler was not unique. The list of vicious, murderous men and women who, as leaders of nations, committed unspeakable crimes is too long to recount. But none of them could have done it without the cooperation of the victims and society in general. Cooperation with the Israeli authorities might lead to short-term relief, but it also validates Israel's right to terrorize and humiliate Palestinians with our consent, quote, we, end quote, being all people of conscience. Whether we are Palestinian or not, the call of the hour is non-cooperation and resistance against all the injustice. Subheading, Hamas is not the problem. Today people lay the blame for the violence in Gaza on Hamas, but Israel did not start its assaults on the Gaza Strip when Hamas was established in the late 1980s. I read that again. Today people lay the blame for the violence in Gaza on Hamas, but Israel did not start its assaults on the Gaza Strip when Hamas was established in the late 1980s, 1988, I believe to be exact. of the year. Israel began attacking Gaza when the Gaza Strip was established and populated with refugees in the early 1950s. Palestinians, particularly in Gaza, are not faced with an option to resist and be killed or live in peace. They are presented with the options of being killed, standing up and fighting, or being killed, sleeping in their beds. Gaza is being punished because Gaza is a constant reminder to Israel and the world of the original sin of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine and the creation of a so-called Jewish state. Even though Palestinian resistance has never presented a military threat to Israel, a military threat, in other words, it's one thing for a tiny number, relatively tiny number, as terrible as each death is, of Israeli citizens who have been killed by rockets out of the Gaza Strip. But the military cannot be dented by the Gazan rockets. That's my clarification there. Let me start again. Gaza is being, even though Palestinian resistance has never presented a military threat to Israel, it has always been portrayed as an existential threat to Israel. Moshe Dayan, the famed Israeli general with the eye patch, described this in a speech in April 1956. He spoke in Kibbutz Nahal Oz, an Israeli settlement on the border of the Gaza Strip, where Israeli tanks park each time there is a ground invasion of Gaza. Quotation here, quote, "Beyond this border exists an ocean of hatred and a deep desire for vengeance," Dayan said then. Ironically, when 6 months later Israel had occupied Gaza and my father was appointed, Miko's father, Mati Peled, was appointed its military governor, he said he saw, quote, "no hatred or desire for vengeance, but a people eager to live and work together for a better future," end quote. Still, today, Israeli commanders and politicians say pretty much the same. Israel is destined to live by the sword and must strike Gaza whenever possible. Never mind the fact that Palestinians have never posed a military challenge, much less a threat to Israel. After all, Palestinians have never possessed as much as a tank, a warship, or a fighter jet, not to say a regular army, or not to mention a regular army. Subheading, a threat to Israel's legitimacy. So why the fear? Why the constant six-decade-long campaign against Gaza? Because Palestinians in Gaza, more so than anywhere else, pose a threat to Israel's legitimacy. Not its existence, but its legitimacy. Israel is an illegitimate. Remember, folks, this is a Jewish man born and bred in Israel who now lives in the United States, most likely for his and his family's own security. He says Israel is an illegitimate creation born of the unholy union between racism and colonialism, and the refugees who make up the majority of the population in the Gaza Strip are a constant reminder of this. They are a reminder of the crime of ethnic cleansing upon which Israel was established. The poverty, lack of resources, and lack of freedom stand in stark contrast to the abundance, freedom, and power that exist in Israel and that rightfully belongs to Palestinians. I would say to Palestinians as well. Back at Ben Gurion Airport that night, I was told that if I cooperated and plead with the shift supervisor, it would make the security screenings go faster. When I declined this generous offer, I was told they, quote, did not like my attitude. And they proceed, end quote, and they proceeded to paste a sticker with the same barcode on my luggage and give me the same treatment Palestinians receive. New subheading, quote, never again, question mark. As I write these words, the number of innocents murdered by Israel in Gaza has risen beyond 2,000. Ending the insufferable, brutal, and racist regime that was created by the Zionists in Palestine is the call of our time. Criticizing Palestinian resistance is unconscionable. Israel must be subjected to boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Israeli diplomats must be sent home in shame. Israeli leaders and Israeli commanders traveling abroad must fear prosecution. And these measures are to be combined with disobedience, non-cooperation, and uncompromising resistance. This and only this will show mothers, fathers, and children in Gaza that the world cares and that never again is more than an empty promise. End of article. And most famously, the phrase never again refers to the constant, unceasingly oft-repeated declaration of the survivors of the Nazi Holocaust in World War II and those who feel they must honor the Israeli Zionist project for that reason, for that historical reason, never again is a battle cry. It could be said to be merely a resolute declaration of eternal commitment, but it morphs into this horrible, violent battle cry. When you yell, never again, as in no more Holocausts against the Jews, it morphs into we will kill Palestinians indiscriminately and make excuses for that. And with the terrible complicity of the U.S. government and the unknowing American taxpayer who funds all of this, we really do, we fund all of it. Never again has turned into a blood-curdling scream of, in effect, vengeance for the lives of those murdered in the Nazi Holocaust and making the Palestinians pay for it. Never again, my friends, must mean never again for anyone, ever, at any place. Now, if I can just get back to... Okay, there it is. It's 4:38 p.m. this Monday, August 18, in the year 2014. Just for fun, let's look at the comments. This Miko Peled newsletter just came out, so it's very possible there are no comments. Aha, I see comments to this article. 29 responses from the Holocaust to the massacre in Gaza through Ben-Gurion Airport, the article I just read. Dr. Mahmoud Al-Farek, as the person calls himself, says, I wish God gives me some of your courage, talents, and patience. Ontogram declares, right on, the call is now for civil disobedience, assuring media coverage. We Americans will not tolerate the Zionist state, nor the special relationship any longer. Well, you, sir, or madam, Ontogram, may not tolerate it. I may not tolerate it, but admittedly, there's next to nothing we can do right now. We must unify and we must make our voices be heard in the long run. Raleigh Cruz writes here, fantastic position. Now if only more people can follow. That follows along the lines of what I just said. Riman Mahmoud Al-Farek, some people care. Miko Peled posted, the morning after Leilat al-Qadr, the death toll in Gaza was approaching its first 1,000. I spent the holy night in al-Qadir. Oh, I think that There was probably a glitch in that comment there. Mike says, Mr. Pellet, I praise your goodness, your courage, and your conviction. Maria Palestina, thank you, Miko. Israel needs 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 voices like yours. Elaine, Miko, thank you for your courage and pursuit of justice. You know, quite honestly, when I look at the comment sections to internet articles such as this, while kind of with a lump in my throat, grasping myself, I automatically tend to look for dissenters, people who want to say something nasty, something bad against these people. Not because that's an aspect of my personality, other than being willing to accept all sides of an opinion. But for that reason, and if nothing else, to demonstrate that no matter what someone says, no matter how true what they're saying is, people can still be jerks and grasp for straws out of their own narrative, the narrative that they grew up on and don't dare let go of, because, frankly, they can't stand the pain of having to accept the evils that are involved in their side of the story. Catalan says, Mr. Pellet, I'm a shy Hungarian-American Jew. What can I do here in Chicago to help and support your fantastic effort to do something about Israel's repression of Palestinians? Isn't it too late to liberate the Palestinians? In South Africa, the blacks were the majority, and they had a Mandela. And the apartheid ended 20 years ago, although started about the same time when Israel was founded. Mr. Pellet, where do you get your optimism? Don't forget, people like me have to worry about the NSA, the National Security Agency, and their eavesdropping and media electronic spying on American people. People like me have to worry about the NSA putting us on the blacklist these days. And I'm sure she's referring to us as those in solidarity with the Palestinians. She goes on to say, I hope you'll write back something encouraging. Thank you for working so hard on saving the dignity of humankind. Catalan. Warren R. Smith, you have my deepest respect for your display of courage and understanding. Incidentally, regarding Caitlin's long one, the shy Hungarian-American Jew, she laments the fact, infers, she says that South Africa had a Mandela, as she put it. They had a Mandela. Apparently lamenting the fact that the Palestinians don't have their version of a Mandela. Consider the case of Mr. Omar Barghouti, a former active leader in Palestinian civil society and Palestinian resistance, the man is still alive, but through his political incarcerated form of martyrdom, continues to be a leader of the Palestinian people. From my readings, Mr. Barghouti is the most likely potential Nelson Mandela for Palestine of all Palestine's notable celebrity leaders, except for the fact that he's incarcerated by Israel. He was, according to the allegations by the Israelis, involved with the murder of an Israeli. Could have been an Israeli soldier, maybe a civilian, I don't remember the details. But there is also dispute, a great deal of dispute, about his actual involvement in the murder of this individual. And he is indeed being held in an Israeli prison, probably an Israeli military prison. It seems quite apparent that Mr. Barghouti is being held not so much for this supposed crime that he is said to have committed or been involved with to one degree or another, but he's being held because of his potential Mandela-likeness, his Mandela-ness. the fact that he could and is still expected by some in the PA to be the heir apparent when Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will likely soon step down. Mr. Abbas himself has stated his preference for Mr. Barghouti to take his place, but Israel has him locked up. Okay. Lots more praise in the comments section to this, so I'm going to try to move on to something else here. It's 4:46 in the afternoon, Pacific Daylight Time. This is kind of a clumsy... I'm not used to navigating through Peled's newsletters, and they don't come all that... He calls it a weekly digest, but I sure don't get them on a weekly basis. I wonder if that's my fault or the fact that he has a lot of difficulty in preparing them on a weekly basis. My name is Ren Tawil, by the way, and you are listening to the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Normally at broadcasting at 101.3 FM, we are off of the airwaves for the moment, and I'm sure we will be for at least a few more days until we get this transmitter problem ironed out. But we are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, available on the internet through our online streaming service at freakradio.org. If you're listening to a rerun or a refeed, don't forget this show continues on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Go to www.freakradio.org, scroll down the main page, and click on the schedule so you can remind yourself of when this show and your other favorite programs on Free Radio air, if only through cyberspace. I'm going to read to you again the current complaint against the world's most renowned survivor of the Nazi Holocaust, Mr. Elie Wiesel, a man who has made quite a name for himself in promoting awareness of the crime of the Holocaust, that specific crime, and doing little or nothing to alert the world to the fact that essentially the same crimes or very similar crimes are committed against other peoples, and that Israel is very much capable of perpetuating this kind of crime on other peoples. Israel itself, Israeli Jews themselves. IJAN, the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. Not a contradiction in terms. The International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network has put out this statement. It's been out for a couple of weeks now. Thank you for the many who have already donated to publish this ad, this as an ad in the New York Times. We still have a long way to go to reach our goal. If you can, please donate. If you are a survivor or a descendant, of a survivor of the Nazi genocide and wants to join the growing number of signatories to this statement, add your name. To donate funds to place this as an ad in the New York Times to counter Elie Wiesel's manipulation, the Nazi genocide, to attempt to justify the attacks on Gaza, donate. They also would like you to send money directly to Gaza for humanitarian relief. Donate to the Middle East Children's Alliance. Of course, the item that I'm reading from here has computer links to those places. Middle East Children's Alliance, donation for the ad, etc. There is even a link to the actual statement that Elie Wiesel made in... which essentially enforces the idea that Hamas are child murderers implementing making the connection between the Palestinian Hamas leadership and the deaths of Palestinian children who, in fact, were killed by Israel with the war machine paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. I will not read Elie Wiesel's statement, his manipulation of the Nazi genocide. If you're that interested, you can go yourself. Just Google IJAN, International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, IJAN. Google it. Look for anything referring to Elie Wiesel, ELIEWIESEL. It's a big item on IJAN's website right now. If you're that hungry to read what he said, go right ahead. I will read IJAN's statement that they're trying to publish as an ad in the New York Times. They managed to get it into the UK Guardian, where Wiesel managed to put his horrible ad up, and this is the counter to it. Trying to put this in the New York Times, too, again, as a follow-up to Wiesel's statement. Jewish survivors and descendants of survivors of Nazi genocide unequivocally condemn the massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. As Jewish survivors and descendants of survivors of the Nazi genocide, we unequivocally condemn the massacre of Palestinians in Gaza and the ongoing occupation and colonization of historic Palestine. We further condemn the United States for providing Israel with the funding to carry out the attack, and Western states more generally for using their diplomatic muscle to protect Israel from condemnation. Genocide begins with the silence of the world. We are alarmed by the extreme racist dehumanization of Palestinians in Israeli society, which has reached a fever pitch. In Israel, politicians and pundits in the Times of Israel publication and the Jerusalem Post have called openly for genocide of Palestinians, and right-wing Israelis are adopting neo-Nazi insignia. I'll say that again. We're alarmed by the extreme racist dehumanization of Palestinians in Israeli society, which has reached a fever pitch. In Israel, politicians and pundits in the Times of Israel and the Jerusalem Post have openly called for genocide of Palestinians, and right-wing Israelis are adopting neo-Nazi insignia. According to this, it says here, furthermore, we are disgusted and outraged by Elie Wiesel's abuse of our history in these pages to promote blatant falsehoods used to justify the unjustifiable. Israel's wholesale effort to destroy Gaza and the murder of nearly 2,000 Palestinians, including many hundreds of children. Nothing can justify bombing UN shelters, homes, hospitals, and universities. Nothing can justify depriving people of electricity and water. We must raise our collective voices and use our collective power to bring about an end to all forms of racism, including the ongoing genocide of Palestinian people. We call for an immediate end to the siege against and blockade of Gaza. We, IJAN, the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, call for the full economic, cultural, and academic boycott of Israel. And as I mentioned earlier, this is where I got the quote from, the phrase never again must mean never again for anyone. And then the immensely long list of signatories up to the point where I received this particular email, including my dear friend Hedy Epstein. Hedy's name appears here, and the explanation, the description, her parents and other family members were deported to Camp de Gurs and subsequently all perished in Auschwitz. Hedy now lives in the United States. My friend Hedy lives in the Midwest, and interestingly enough, of all places, St. Louis, Missouri, on the outskirts of Ferguson, Missouri. Hedy just celebrated her 90th birthday. God bless you, my dear. Happy 90th. Hedy was with myself and 42 other people on the island of Cyprus 6 years ago this month as we prepared to sail to the Gaza Strip, which we eventually did as a token of our solidarity with the Palestinian people. Hedy, unfortunately, was not able to make the trip with us. Largely due to her health and advanced age, it was too difficult, frankly, to even get her onto the boat, but she was very much a part of what was going on. Okay, folks, it's time to quit now. 5 minutes to five. Thank you for joining me. Please continue to tune in. Thanks ever so much to the two phone calls I received from supporters today, simply giving me their best wishes, including, you know, while I was playing the music during the mid-show break. I know you didn't hear the ring, but someone did call during the musical break. A man who said he lived in Monterey and listens on, I believe he said, Sea Crane Radio. He's able to pick up, well, in this case, not the airborne broadcast signal, because it's not going anywhere yet, but he's in Monterey, which is a good 40, 50 miles from Santa Cruz here, and he hears the show and wanted to wish us the best. Please consider donating to Free Radio Santa Cruz. The postal address is on our website at freakradio.org. Tune in next Monday at 3 p.m. for more great stuff about this, about the Palestinian narrative and plain-ass truth about what's really going on. Also tune in Saturday at 11 a.m. for, of course, the weekend edition of Mideast Migraines. The Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines is dedicated to the reading of important books on the topic. Thank you again and goodbye.